Welcome to People Doing Physics, the podcast exploring the personal side of physics here at the Cavendish Laboratory at the University of Cambridge. Hi, I'm Simone Zaguirre Barker, a PhD student in experimental physics and your host for this episode. Today's format is a little different to our usual episodes, as we've invited four Cavendish alumni for a panel discussion about all things physics and career development. They'll tell us about what they learned at the Cavendish, their natural sciences and physics background, as well as how their doctoral research in physics shaped their careers and brought them to where they are today. We're joined by Aswathi Girija, commissioning editor at the Institute of Physics, Professor Kirsten Gofrich, group leader at the Max Planck Institute of Medical Research, Joanne Baker, author of four popular science books and editor at Nature Opinion, and Emma Williams, professional development coach and careers expert who has a wealth of insight into not just her own career, but also the careers of those she's mentored. We hope that this conversation will give you valuable insights into the many paths and opportunities for people doing physics.
So I'm going to let the panelists introduce themselves, just because they know what they do better than I do. And we'll start off with Dr. Aswathi Girija. So if you could just tell us what your current role is and also when you were here at the Cavendish and what you did then.
Hey, thanks, Simone. So yes, I am Aswathi. I am currently working as a subject commissioning editor at IOP Publishing, which is the publishing arm of IOP, the Institute of Physics. And I started my PhD at Cavendish in the optoelectronics group back in October 2019, and I've just handed in my thesis like 4 months ago, so I have not officially graduated yet. But yes, I'm an experimental physicist. I studied energy materials. I looked at how they work at like really ultra-fast timescales towards applications in solar energy harvesting and devices. So yes, I think I consider, so yes, I'm not officially an alumni yet, so right in that path about to become an alumni.
Yeah. And Kirsten?
Yeah, first of all, congratulations, that's awesome. So I'm Kirsten Gepprich. I'm a professor at the Center for Molecular Biology of Heidelberg University. And I started there I moved to Heidelberg in 2019 after a postdoc and my PhD at the Cavendish Laboratory, which I did from 2013 to 2017. So it's been a while that I was in Cambridge, but I have the time in my best memories, I have to say.
Emma?
Hi, so I'm Emma Williams. I'm feeling very old at this point. So I graduated from natural sciences in 1993, back when it was a 3-year degree. And now I run my own professional development business working with early career researchers in universities across the UK and overseas. So from the Cavendish, I went on to a PhD in an experimental PhD in magnetic resonance imaging at Adam Brooks in Cambridge as well.
Jo?
Hi, so I'm Jo Baker and I'm the chief opinion editor at Nature, and I'm probably the oldest, I guess, here. So I was a natural science student back in the late 80s, so I graduated in 1990. And then I was a postdoc. I did my PhD in Australia, actually. I went to Sydney University, but I came back to the Cavendish as a postdoc. So I was an astronomer, and I used to run a small radio telescope up at Lord's Bridge for a few years, which I really enjoyed. And then I did research for sort of 10 years as a postdoc in various places, and then disappeared into the publishing world. So so that's me.
Amazing. Well, as you can see, we have quite a variety of, you know, people from different moments in time, different careers and so on. So I think it'll be a really interesting conversation. I think to get started, one thing that we always talk about on the podcast, which is always, you know, people do physics, a path to physics. I'd be interested in hearing what drew you to physics originally. And also like the Cavendish itself. So maybe we can start off with Joe and Emma. I guess you were at the Cavendish at similar moments in time. What drew you there and what drew you to physics?
Joe, do you want to go first?
Oh gosh, I was obsessed with astronomy as a kid. So I saw Patrick Moore, who's an English He used to do lots of television programs, so The Sky at Night. So I was sort of, I saw him talk when I was 10 or something in Cornwall where I grew up, and that sort of set me on the path. I really wanted to do astronomy, so which is pretty common, I think. So that's what got me going.
And specifically to Cambridge, yes?
Cambridge. I guess that was just, I guess I just did well at school, so I managed to get in. So I was at a comprehensive in Cornwall, so it was a bit of a leap to go to Cambridge.
So for me, I think I'd always wanted to be a researcher at Cambridge since I was about 4 doing science. I'm not sure how I knew that, but we used to have the Open University programmes on the television. So perhaps I'd assimilated some of that. And I was going to be an engineer until someone gave me some advice that it was really hard as a woman when I was 16. So I took that on board and thought physics might give me a better option. And when I was applying to Cambridge, Stephen Hawking had just brought out his book. And my family were amazed that I could actually read it and understand some of the words. So I think I went to Cambridge along with the rest of my year wanting to be the next Stephen Hawking, and then realised there was a lot more maths and that I didn't love maths quite enough. But that's how I ended up there.
Mm-hmm. And what about you, Aswathi and Kirsten?
Well, so I did not have any aspirations to pursue science, to be honest. So I grew up in India, and I was generally interested in science, but had no clear direction. So for my undergraduate, I went to this Indian Institute of Science Education and Research, which focuses on fundamental research and, you know, just integrating that in the undergraduate curriculum. So that's where I started liking physics. Started working in a research laboratory. So for me, it was more of ruling out what I don't want to do, which is what took me, you know, just in the direction of physics. And then again, Cambridge was just never a dream even then. So then I went on to do another master's in the US. So that's when I started interested in this area of optoelectronics, energy materials, photonics, and so on. So Cambridge was the best place to perform that research. So I thought I'll give it a go. And that's how I ended up in Cambridge. It was not planned. It was sort of just taking those opportunities, looking at what are those options and just going with that flow.
Mm-hmm. Was it similar for you, Kirsten, or were you more set on it?
Well, quite honestly, so I was always super fascinated by the kinds of questions that my parents couldn't answer, the big questions like, you know, what is life? Is it possible to build life from scratch? Like these really, really big questions that grown-ups didn't have an answer for when I was a kid. And then because a lot of these questions are related to life and living things, I started actually to study molecular medicine because I thought then I don't have to decide. I have a bit of physics, bit of chemistry, bit of math, bit of, you know, bit of biology. So I had a little bit of everything. So I didn't start out studying physics. But then in my first year, I had a lecture on physical chemistry and we learned the Schrödinger equation and we had very little math. And so I was learning these symbols by heart. It was literally symbols for me. And I thought, no, I came to university to understand the world. I need to study physics now. I need to understand what's actually behind this rather than just learning it by heart. And so actually after my first year is when I changed into physics. I was at the University of Erlangen. So really this desire to deeply understand is what brought me to physics, I guess.
And in terms of when your time at Cambridge and also your time, I guess, when you were studying physics as an undergraduate or a postgraduate, would you say that there's any lessons beyond the physics itself that you learned that you still carry kind of with you today in terms of, I mean, I guess we can start with Kirsten. I mean, you're a professor maybe some of those concepts more in your day to day.
Yeah, it's true. It's quite interesting, right? Because I was recruited by the Faculty of Biology. So you could say, well, you're no longer a physicist. I would say what carries on, and maybe I don't use that much physics on day to day basis, right? I don't solve equations. I don't, I work with, you know, living things or at least trying to make living things. But I think what stayed with me and which deeply influences my science is kind of this model thinking. You know, physics has been extremely successful at building models, traditionally of the non-living world, right, to describe a certain phenomenon in an abstract way. So you capture the essentials, but you you don't get lost in details, so to say. You describe a system in a simplified way. And life, or even the simplest unit of life, namely a cell, is extremely complex. And having this kind of abstract thinking and thinking, okay, let's build models that capture the essentials but don't get lost in detail. This is the kind of thinking that stayed to me with me until today, and that also deeply influences the way I do research. So quite literally, I want to build a model of a cell. I want to build a synthetic model cell, so to say.
I think Aswathi and Joe, I mean, you both have worked, I mean, maybe Aswathi, you just started working in editing, but, you know, Joe, you have a career in editing and writing and also popular science. I guess beyond just being in contact with the science in terms of like the things that you're looking at, how do you kind of carry that physics with you?
Right. So interestingly, I did my PhD during the pandemic. So probably ours is the only batch that went into the course without knowing what to expect. And then suddenly after a few months, there was pandemic, right? So as an experimental physicist who spent a lot of time in the lab, a lot of options were sort of shut down for a couple of months. So apart from science, right, what it prepared me was to sort of embrace that unknown and accordingly adapt your skills. So it's not just the experimental skills and the data analysis skills that you pick up, but it's also to understand ways in which you can work with other researchers, with the community, and adapt your sort of skills accordingly. So I believe that also, and at that point, I had no idea what I wanted to do, after my PhD. I'm very much interested in science. So I knew that I wanted to stay in that research ecosystem, but not sure, like, how. I also was pretty clear that I did not want to take a sort of traditional, academic path, doing a postdoc and perhaps going towards leading a research group. So I was just thinking of these different options. So the aspects I think I picked up were, I knew I wanted to be in that broader area of research. So I want to know, I want to learn about so many different things, not just go deeper into one particular area of research. And then I wanted to be in that academic research ecosystem. And publishing somehow sort of came as an option. Again, I wasn't sure, apart from the peer review process and editing, what options I have as a physicist, as an experimental physicist. And thankfully, I came across this fantastic opportunity where, so my role is not just in terms of peer review or editing. In fact, I don't work with peer review system at all at this point. It is to more like identify what are these emerging areas of research? Where is the funding going? What are the science policies? How can you make physics and in general science more accessible to people by making sure, you have sort of equitable way of disseminating research, if that makes sense, making it more open, accessible, faster, quicker. So I was passionate about all these aspects of science, not just that particular research that you're doing. And then this is where I could combine all those skills. Mm-hmm. And mine is also a new role where I have a lot of flexibility and options where you propose ideas towards making all these happen and then work in just bringing those into fruition. And in that way, I also get to work with academics on a day-to-day basis. You talk to them, you meet them, you try to understand how publishing can support researchers in disseminating their research. So I still don't think that I've gone away from the academic, just landscape. I still feel I am indeed in academia, but not as an active researcher. Yeah. But I think all these skills, all these soft skills were picked up definitely during the PhD training and just interacting with the community.
Yeah. Well, did you feel similarly, Jo, when you started your writing and editing career, that you were kind of taking the physics that you learn, all the other skills that you had, and finding something that was able to combine all those aspects of your kind of professional skills?
No, definitely. I mean, that rings a lot of bells. So when I first left academic research and moved, I was an editor at Science magazine in Cambridge, so I moved back to Cambridge again. But I remember, and then I did work, I was the Earth and Space editor there, so I was covering everything from sort of geology through up to particle physics and astrophysics and all the planetary physics stuff. So I was dealing with the Mars rover people. And so I did, in that particular job, I remember feeling like I was using every every scrap of knowledge that I've picked up in my entire life about every area of science. So whether it's, and that was one of the good things about the courses at Cambridge, is that you can, I did geology, I did chemistry, I did quite a broad range of science. And then I found I was using all of that. You know, if you're studying the chemistry of meteorites or something like that, I could had a bit of a handle on it from stuff I've been exposed to. So I valued that very wide base of science that we get doing natural sciences at Cambridge. And bringing a sort of, as Kirsten said, the sort of logical, rational approach that you learn when you study physics, and sort of bringing that into other areas. But also I've always really enjoyed the research side of things. So, the unknown questions and trying to be a bit of a detective and sort things out, solve problems, think outside the box. So all of those things are things I've carried with me through research and the stuff I've studied.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, one thing that keeps coming up in a lot of these podcast episodes is kind of like the power of, interdisciplinarity and bringing in all these different aspects of, science and physics are not just equations and the facts, right? Like there's a process by which you figure out what those facts are, figure out what that research is, and always questioning that. So it's really nice to hear kind of how you've carried that mindset and skills. I guess, Emma, I mean, I was interested in keeping you to last just because I think that, it's not, you can speak not just about your own career, but obviously you also have coached a lot of people and, you run all these career development workshops. So I was going to ask if you could talk about kind of how the time you've spent in physics has affected your journey, but also how you've seen other people, maybe if there's anything that we haven't touched upon now, maybe from people working in perhaps more like industry research roles or business roles as well. Kind of what your experience as also a facilitator through that journey is of how people take physics on board beyond academia.
Yeah, I was trying to jot down some thoughts beforehand and thinking about what did I get from my degree. And I think what Joe said about the natural sciences and having that slightly broader base, though I hated chemistry and I ended up in the safety shower at Lensfield Road. So that was me and chemistry parting ways. But it did give you that understanding of the way that disciplines develop a mindset. And I think that's probably what I've got over and above everything else, is that I've got a physics mindset. As Kirsten was saying, we make models. And so even in my career work now, I try and like, right, why does this work? How can we map out careers? And you've got that constant like trying to wrestle with stuff and make models and think, right, okay, if we do this, then this will happen. So I think that, and lots of perseverance. I didn't find my degree easy by any stretch of the imagination. You got through it. And I think that was the perseverance. And the other thing that I'm thinking about careers and perhaps where my interests came from, that I was a student rep in my final year. So I was in charge. One of the things I've got as a big year's picture of us all, and thinking there aren't very many women on that photo. Hopefully there are a lot more should we replicate that today. And so I think that's where I started realizing that you could influence careers, even as a student, as a representative, and help people along that way. And so I think my development has been more towards taking that problem-solving mindset, but applying it to people's problems. And then thinking about the physicists that I've known, I wish the one thing, if I had a magic wand, is that whether people stay in academia or move into science-related or even move completely out of science, I think you're still a physicist. You've still got that mindset. And so to lose there is a bit of, if you haven't made it in academia, and I think if you move out, we need people who are scientifically literate and numerate in We really need them in government, but I won't start that on a podcast. We could be here all day. We really need them in policy. We need them as teachers in our schools. We need them in every walk of life. That scientific literacy is so valuable. And, you know, I work a lot with early career researchers, and they kind of come and they say, oh, I've done my PhD and now I have to, you know, I'm thinking of going. And they almost say it really quietly. And it's like, no, you've got so many fantastic skills. And especially if you've stayed and you've done a master's or a research degree, you've got so much to offer the world that it shouldn't be a reluctance to go out in the world. It should be like, I'm going to take all this stuff and go and make a difference one way or another. So whether that is in academia, or in science related, so like Ashwathi and Joe are doing, or, you know, completely different, go and run, I don't know, a coffee shop or something with scientific things all over the wall. So I think it should be, I think a physics education should be celebrated, but I think we could probably do more about realizing, helping people to realize the skills they've got, rather than just go, right, okay, you're great at doing problem sheets, so, or you're great at doing this experiment, is to really help. So hopefully the physics education has moved on there. And I think the other thing that if I had a wish would be to fold in more sort of enterprise learning into a degree, because that was the one thing that my degree or my PhD perhaps didn't prepare me for, was running a business, but even just being enterprising. So I moved from my PhD into the professional services side of a university, where you have to write business cases and argue your case and various other things. And I didn't really have the sort of that enterprising lens. It's something that I've learned along the way, but I think it's something that perhaps we could help people be more prepared for. I was about to say the real world, but physics is all about the real world, so I won't say that. But I think that's a very tangible skill that we could build in quite easily into the curriculum, I think.
Yeah. And I think it's also something that, I mean, from what you've discussed, and I'm going to ask Kirsten what she thinks about this, is that actually, you know, those are all skills that even if you do stay in academia and you do want to have a research career, you know, you need to write grant proposals, you need to know how to have a budget, you need to know how to manage people. And those aren't things that you're optimizing for when you are doing a postdoc or you are doing your PhD. You're not, you know, it's all about like, what is the research, what is the outputs, and then how do those things get you the next thing. But then once you get to that thing, then you're looking back, and then now the things, your job description has totally changed from the things that you've proven you can do, right? And I think like that definitely is a big gap in kind of how the academic system works, that I'm sure, you know, everybody would benefit from having that kind of thing embedded into the curriculum for sure. And the other thing I was going to say that I'd love to hear your thoughts as well, is if you think that the physics curriculum you had was the physics curriculum that kind of people expected that you would, like, that you were expecting to get, and also... but before we do that, I just want to ask Kirsten about that in terms of what you just said, Emma.
Yes. Yeah, so I mean, you're completely right. There's a lot of skills that you need as a PI, as a group leader, that you don't really get when you work in the lab hands-on doing experiments all day long, right? Like, it's a completely different skill set. But I have the feeling, you know, in your PhD, you also have the opportunity to explore. So for instance, in my PhD in Cambridge, I was doing the teaching associate program, which was a one-year program that brought me into teaching for higher education, which turned out to be extremely beneficial for writing applications later on, or other little things like that, right? I always tell my group or my students, you know, you don't have to do all of this. Just pick whatever you're most interested in, because that's going to develop your own unique profile. You know, I was, for instance, working with the naked scientists in Cambridge alongside my PhD for some time or so, right? Because I was fascinated by communicating science and by, you know, pitching it to a broader audience. And certainly that's a skill that's valuable now that I write grants and that I have to talk about my work in different kind of settings and so on. But then there's so many of these skills that become relevant that, you know, you you just pick the one you're interested in, and in this way develop your unique profile. You'll always be better at some things and worse at others, and you know, that's just part of the game. So I mean, it's a very diverse job, and that's really what's most fun about it, I think.
Yeah, I think one thing that is coming out of this conversation is something that I guess maybe if you're, you know, just starting university and you're saying, okay, I'm going to go into natural sciences or physics or chemistry or anything that were physical sciences, you know, you think like, I'm going to be solving these questions, I'm going to be solving these problems. But sometimes people outside and people around you might be like, well, what are you going to do with your physics degree, right? And I think that what you were saying, Emma, before about kind of the lack of maybe some representation at that time, and obviously now, you know, there are more women in physics and engineering and math and sciences in general, but there is still a question of, you know, gender stereotypes, or, you know, even access to education from like socioeconomic or kind of cultural barriers, or and kind of the experience that people have at university obviously being, you know, affected by all those broader kind of topics. And so I guess, do you think that that to some extent stems from this kind of physics career or this physics education from the outside, like people not who haven't gone through it, not really understanding the breadth of the skills that you get, or kind of this like idea that everyone's going to be this mad scientist, Albert Einstein type person? Or I guess, Joe, you've worked on, I mean, not just as an editor and a writer, but I mean, you have popular science books where you are talking about science to a broader audience. And I've seen your book at the bookstore, which I was like, I recognize this name now. I guess how has your experience been in terms of kind of a very public facing scientist and physicist, and how people perceive you?
I suppose, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think that physics is taught in a really strange, narrow way. I personally wish that more of the history of physics was taught. And in writing my books, I understand physics through the history of learning about it. So things like thermodynamics are such a weird Victorian, you know, kind of construct. And yet it's sort of taught as if it's sort of brought down by the hand of God or something. And it's all kind of, you know, whereas actually it's very much made by people. I mean, all the rules are named after people, but they're quite strange ideas actually when you step back. So I've personally found I understand things a lot better, like quantum mechanics and things, if you go back and read about them, read the origins of the ideas. So it's not just an set of equations, it was discussions amongst people. So I find, certainly for myself, putting that sort of human face on physics and how the ideas have evolved and where they've come from gives me a lot more depth in understanding the concepts, which has not been how I've experienced the teaching of physics. And I think that would make people less scared of it, frankly, and see it's more of a cultural thing and not just some abstract thing, because maths, you could argue, is totally abstract and it's rule based and one thing logically follows the other, but that's not true of physics is about approximations and other things like that. So it's much more practical and it has a stronger cultural component, I think. So for me, that's something that could be improved, I think. So, and the practical aspects of applying it outside. And in my experience, I think, and certainly places like Cambridge, so I related to what Emma was saying, that I mean, there was definitely a feeling that you had to be Einstein or you were out. And I think a lot of these very elite universities, they have a very narrow view of who Einstein is, put it that way. So it's I think those things, they're worse in some places than others. I know when I moved to Australia, I found it was very different. It was much more collegiate. There were different groups and universities working together. I didn't feel, you know, it was strange, whereas I think Cambridge is very extreme, and other places I've worked are similarly, these sort of highly competitive research universities are very extreme in how they take their physics. So it's all about Nobel Prizes and it's not about the sort of everyday or the richness of it. So I think that some places have their own cultures as well, and that could be changed and hopefully will be changed by having more diverse people doing physics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think you're totally right in that when you are in an environment where everyone, you know, people are there because they achieve these high scores, because you have this high performance environment, then it's easy to you know, even if you don't want to start comparing yourself to other people. But I think also you also do get on the flip side what Kirsten said of, you know, a lot of all those opportunities for doing all these things, being in those environments, because people think, oh, I want to, you know, attract these certain people of what you think is going to be, you know, like a high achieving student. And so there are a lot of opportunities to get involved with other things as well. So I think I would encourage people to get involved with what they can, and even stuff like being a student rep, like you were saying, Emma. Mm-hmm. Small ways that you can start to develop that unique personality, like Kirsten was saying, professionally. And I would add also that, you know, Einstein had a lot of help. You know, his wife, Mila Merrick, did a lot of his writing and stuff as well. And I think often it's also about the context of who gets to do physics, but whose name is on the physics that gets done, right? Mm-hmm. If you read a lot of these textbooks, or like you look back at the work that was done a few hundred years ago, in the acknowledgement section, you know, sometimes it's like, you know, my wife wrote this entire, you know, thing, thank you very much. Or, you know, the kind of the research assistants that didn't necessarily get credit for the things that they did. And I think that, yeah, that's definitely something that we need to keep in mind when we're talking about kind of these big names, and then kind of making them a bit more human, because, you know, they were obviously geniuses in the physics that they came up with, but the access and the resources they had to do so were maybe different from, you know, what we have as an individual PhD student in the lab or something like that. Aswathi, I guess you said before that you work on kind of looking at how to expand that access to education, to physics education, and how those things might start changing. Was your interest in that kind of shaped by your own experiences? And also, what are kind of the new things we should be looking out for and the theories of how to make education more accessible?
Yes, definitely. I think it is closely related with where I come from, what my journey was, and what my experience was during that journey. So I've studied in India, US, and the UK, and each of those were pretty big jumps for me. So when I went to my undergraduate studies, that's when I saw, oh, one could do research. In fact, one could need not do research in like just theoretical physics, right? There's interdisciplinarity. And thankfully, that particular education system was, it embedded all these different aspects. So I could choose courses that I wanted to do. So I did not have to sort of specialize in a particular subject. So I could take some courses from physics, chemistry, maths, biology, and then sort of carve my own path. When I went to the US, I was in fact hosted in the engineering department. So my work was pretty much applied physics. But in this process, I was also involved in like the science communication activities. So I organized this conference called Communicating Science Conference when I was in the US. It's called ComSciCon. So all these sort of it forces you to get out of your comfort zone, talk to people who do different things. So you need to take a step back and think, okay, how do I explain to a biologist what I do in lab, right? Because they are all like brilliant people. They do research in their labs, but the language is different. So that becomes extremely important. It's not just necessary for you to like do the research, but then like, how do you make sure the society should know it? And like, because again, there's a lot of investment in science. So it's like a give and take process, right? And then also when I was at Cavendish, I was involved in like a couple of science communication activities. I just took part in this 3-minute wonder. It's an event where you have to summarize your research to a non-specialist audience in like 3 minutes. So all these sort of experiences made me aware that, okay, it's extremely important for you to like think about those aspects, right? And also because I come from, I just worked in these different countries, different departments, and the culture is different. So you need to sort of tune your skills and develop according to like who you are interacting with. Also, like, how do I tell my parents, my family, they've no background in science. So every time I talk to them, I need to think about, okay, how do I make sure, you know, they understand what I'm talking about, they appreciate, et cetera, et cetera. So I would say this interdisciplinarity and exposure to different environments was extremely important for me to sort of appreciate that, okay, it's important to invest in this education. And also, I guess, especially in places like Cambridge, right, you tend to be in a bubble where you sort of fail to see how your research is applicable to the external world, because you're always talking to people in your lab, people who come from, yeah, perhaps this. I would like to say that there is a lot of pressure in sort of making it in academia, if that makes sense, right? Even if your aspirations are different, there is no option for you to sort of explore those. So for me, it was always about, okay, just take a step back, think about the implications, and then decide, okay, if these are your aspirations, how can I use my scientific, the training in scientific research and scientific process to make sure you go where you want to go? So yeah, I guess like I don't really know if I touched the questions, but for me it was always about just taking a step back and reflecting on like why you want to do what you want to do, and is it getting shaped by the peers? Or of course it could be a combination of all these aspects, right? But oftentimes there's a lot of pressure to do what the environment wants you to do. Mm-hmm. So I guess yeah. That sort of reflecting what you want to do is extremely yeah. important, especially
taking your career into your own hands, I guess.
Yeah.
Emma, is that something that you've seen in kind of, I mean, I guess you've now been working in the professional development space for a while. Is that, do you think those attitudes have changed from kind of institutions and how they approach physics graduates, and also what the physics graduates themselves are looking for?
I think with the careers, there is still, I think, as Joe was saying, in research intensive universities, certainly if you go through a PhD, there is still that expectation that, you know, kind of you're going to go into, you know, kind of the academic route. And so if you look around elsewhere, then, you know, people might be a bit more like, oh, why are you doing that? But I think there's also been a rise in sort of thematic sort of doctoral training, so with you know, kind of a sponsored or themes where you've pulled in lots of interdisciplinary people, so you might all be working on, I don't know, microbial resistance, but there might be physicists and chemists and biologists and environmental scientists and everyone in that pool. And I think things like that have really then opened up more careers for the physicists in there, because they're mixing with other disciplines. So like as what they said, you know, kind of we all speak our own little language in silos, so we need to learn, you know, kind of not only need to learn how to talk to those people, but also have them involved in our science, so that we're bringing in a different way of thinking. Because I think, you know, kind of physics teaches you a certain way of thinking, a certain way of approaching, which I still use every day. I can't chop that out of me, even if I tried. And so I think the shift that I've seen is that where there is that interdisciplinarity, there is a more open idea to possible careers or even possible research routes using, you know, so rather than staying in physics and hosting your a fellowship or something in a physics department, you might go and look at engineering or biochemistry or environmental science and move out that way. So I think those interdisciplinary routes have helped open out roles. But I was talking to some people in Cambridge, some women in Cambridge last week about physics. And one of the questions came from a first year undergraduate and said, so my family say I can either be a consultant or an academic with physics. What do you think? So I sent them towards the IOP and I went, go to their website. You can find lots of examples of lots of different people doing different things. So I think sometimes it's our own take on what physicists should be. And like Joe was saying, you know, it was Einstein or bust. Actually, when I was doing my PhD, I suddenly discovered that I was quite a creative scientist, but there hadn't been the opportunity to explore that in the sort of very strict way that we were taught physics back in, you know, when dinosaurs roamed the earth. Sorry, Jay, but it does feel quite a long time ago now. Mm-hmm. And so I think that we, you know, partly we need to step back and think, okay, this is the type of physicist I am. This is what I enjoy. These are my strengths. This is, you know, kind of, we'll be good at a great deal of things. We'll be very good at numeracy. we'd probably be quite good at literacy and writing despite ourselves. I chose physics to not write, and now I have written books. But we need to think about those things that we're good at, but those things that a strength is something that we're good at that makes us feel strong. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, I could program a supercomputer. I did that during my PhD, but please don't make me do it now, because I'd probably weep. It would make me feel really weak. Whereas that creative problem solving, that's the bit that I like. So I think if we step back and we kind of look at our skill set without the blinker of being a physicist, but this is who I am and these are the aspects that I like, where can I take those? Where did they take me? What type of careers?
And to some extent, it's like applying that physics mindset to the physicist, right? Like looking at, like, in the simplest possible terms, who are you and what could that be used for?
Yeah, we need to map it out, draw a diagram and label it properly, and then we'd be there.
Yeah. I mean, Kirsten, you kind of have had that experience that Emma was describing, right? That path where you studied physics, now you're working with, you know, biology. What was that part of what drove you down that path? Or was it that interdisciplinary thinking, or just the fact that you were interested in, you know, what is life?
Yeah, I guess in my case, it's really that this interest for these kind of questions was there from the very, very, very beginning. And also the love for interdisciplinary science. As I say, after school, I couldn't decide, you know, should I study physics, chemistry, biology? I really couldn't decide. And so I think, yeah, interdisciplinary research is also really exciting, because you learn so many different languages, and every day you learn something new. You know, one day you may speak to, you know, a brain surgeon, the next day you may speak to, you know, a theoretical physicist, and you just keep learning. And that's actually part of what I really love about my job and about academia, that, you know, I keep learning every day, and you get to interact with so motivated and driven people. You can select, and this is maybe also my time to make a bit, you know, I do know there are lots of careers out there that are really, really cool, but I have to say, you know, being, you know, at the beginning of your 30s without having a boss, being able to, you know, drive your own research, drive your own ideas forward, there's something extremely exciting about that. So, you know, of course, by all means, choose the career that you like, but don't leave academia because you're afraid not to make it. Make a positive decision, right? Leave academia because you find something else super, super cool. I'm just saying, like, it's an extremely diverse job. It's extremely exciting to be able to design your own research that nobody can take away from you, right? Like in industry, you may be working on a project that, you know, eventually is super exciting, but eventually gets killed for management reasons, for whatever reasons that are beyond your own control, and you have to go for something completely new, right? But in academia, there's always a way to carry forward your pet project, right? And that's just amazing. You can work on a big vision throughout your life and be surrounded by the people that you choose that you choose to be surrounded by. And I think that's what I really enjoy a lot. You know, you don't realize how much you can do when you all of a sudden don't have two hands anymore, but you know, when you have a group of people that is super motivated, and that's I appreciate it every day to see that.
Yeah, I mean, you're like the CEO of your own research, right? Like I guess we're coming up to the end, but I still wanted to ask Joe, kind of, because you have gone into this kind of popular science writing as well as continue your editing career, kind of what, because we haven't really touched upon kind of why, like, what interested you about that? Or was it that you always wanted to write? Or was it because you felt like there was a lack in how people understood certain things, or because you wanted to change people's perceptions? Like, what was your...
A bit like Emma said, I mean, I've always been interested in art and creative outlets. So I did just want to write. So that's largely why I left academia, because I wanted to do more artistic, creative things, which it sounds terrible because academia is, as Kirsten's, you know, passionately said, is a really creative place, or it can be if you can find that space within it. So for me, it was quite a personal drive. Like I enjoy creating things, basically. So that's my sort of passion. for writing and conveying ideas, telling stories. I mean, that's, you know, again, why I'm interested in the history and trying to engage people, like through my work at the moment. Is, you know, I'm doing opinion pieces, which is all about people sharing their opinions, sharing their views, telling stories. So that, I don't know, that's kind of in my psyche, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, as you're rightly pointed out that, I mean, that's what Kirsten was saying about the creativity in academia, but I guess it's kind of like what has been coming up, that you have to find ways to make sure that the career that you choose, whether that's in an academic setting or anywhere else, plays to your strengths, but also allows you to pursue the things that you're interested in. And it's really nice to hear that. It sounds like at least all of you have managed to get to that point, and at least are still on that path of being able to ask those questions that you're interested in. I guess, kind of to touch upon before we're done, in terms of this idea of making these positive decisions, and not leaving because you have to. I mean, obviously, if you absolutely have to, then you can't really do anything about it. But trying to make those positive decisions of finding ways still to pursue those passions, I guess that's come up as a big topic. Are there any other things that you, looking back or looking to your experiences in physics or the experiences you know people have, that you wish could be different in terms of kind of breaking down those barriers? Or what do you think are kind of the key challenges or the key kind of things that people should keep in mind when we are kind of, you know, teaching the next generation or so on? I don't know if Kirsten, you want to start from, since you are the person here who has had that kind of academic path.
Yeah, maybe I can make the connection to Cambridge again. So I think I have to say that I was extremely, extremely lucky, and I acknowledge that in hindsight even more than I did back then, in picking the right group for my PhD. So a huge thank you to Ulrich Kaiser and the group at the Cavendish, because they really created an environment that made me fall in love with science, right? In the way that I try to pass it on to my group now, or to the next generation, right? And I think, yeah, so it's choosing the right setting for yourself, like really exposing yourself to the kind of research groups you go in, checking them out, asking all these tricky questions to the PI, but also to the people in the group. I think that can make really a huge difference and put a positive spirit in academia also forward, pass it on to the next generation.
Mm-hmm. And I guess kind of to close, because we're reaching the point where we have to say goodbye, even though I could keep talking all day. I can't believe it's only been like half an hour. I was going to ask if you were going to kind of give advice to people, because we know that the majority of the people that listen to this podcast are between, you know, people who are maybe starting their undergraduates or thinking about doing an undergraduate, or maybe looking at postgraduates, kind of that age range between, you know, young teenagers and kind of late 20s. If you think about yourself in that moment, even whether it's been a while ago or very recently, what kind of advice would you give to those people who are interested in physics, who are working in physics and making choices about their careers? I don't know if you want to go in whichever order, whoever wants to speak first.
I'm happy to go first. Firstly, I fully agree with Kirsten that it's extremely important the group that you work with can define your career in some way. But having said that, I have experience of like being in not very supportive group in the past. I ended up leaving the group and moving to different groups. So even if some decisions that you make in that journey doesn't end up to be what you expect it to be, it's okay. There are plenty of options out there. So there's always, again, this training makes you adaptable to go and explore. Okay, this didn't work. That's fine. I'll move on to the next one. Maybe that gives you a better exposure. Also, I guess like last year when I was thinking about what to do, like this interest. So I attended this course called Rising Wise. So it is a course for women in science at Cambridge and Oxford, specifically for early career researchers and people who are finishing their PhD. And also what it gave me was, so it was mainly for people who are thinking about enterprise related careers. I wasn't there yet, but I still thought I'll give it a go and see what it is all about. So it helped me sort of build the networking skills, like develop, basically identify my skills and put them in the right place. So that wasn't directly related to me, but I just tried to explore that. So just be open to opportunities. Even if you don't see anybody who look like you, who speak like you in a particular career that you see yourself in the future, just go out and explore. You never know, it could open doors that you never even thought existed before. So just, yeah, be open to explore.
Yeah, I mean, I'd second that. And I certainly, when I wasn't sure what direction I wanted to go in, I did a lot of different courses. So I did stuff, you know, I went into Parliament and spent time there on the Common. I did a lot of things. I did creative writing courses, book writing courses. And I think probably the thing I didn't do enough was probably to look into the interdisciplinary areas and talk to people in other departments in other areas. I did that a little, but I kind of didn't, I felt a bit tentative, I think. Whereas, so I would encourage people to talk to people, go out there. I mean, you've got with a whole university's worth of really interesting people there. And it's just go and roam around, chat to people and find out what people are doing, and take as many opportunities to do courses and you know, upskill or broaden your skills as you can, because there's so much available. So I'd encourage people to do that.
I think for me, it would be keep doing the physics, keep doing the day job, but go and have a look at everything else. So especially in Cambridge, I think some of the biggest lessons that I learned are probably, you know, how to blag your way through a supervision when you've not done the work, and various other things that can, you know, kind of give you a really good, you know, kind of the ability to talk to anyone. So, you know, kind of it being collegiate, you could be next to an art historian and have, you know, seemingly nothing to talk about, and yet you've got to spend an hour talking to this person. So those sorts of extra things. But you know, kind of whether you're doing undergraduate or a research degree, you're in a place of learning, you're in a university, you're within that ecosystem. There are so many opportunities. And I think if I could put myself back in a time machine, I would make more of those. You know, I was very focused on sort of head down trying to get the work done. And yet, you know, kind of other things would have been, you know, kind of, you never know, you don't get to run the experiment twice. But, you know, there are lots of opportunities. We're in places of learning. Universities are fantastic, as well as that wider ecosystem, you know, that with all the businesses and various other things. So, you know, kind of I would, it's to forge and create your network, but very much by having fun whilst doing it, you know, not have. Networking sounds super serious, but just going and exploring and meeting people, like everyone else has said, that's the key. And I just wish I'd done more while I had the opportunity.
Yeah, I guess, I mean, I agree with all that's been said. And I mean, I guess also giving advice to such a diverse group of listeners, right, from the teenage years to, you know, maybe postgraduate students, is actually quite challenging. So I guess the one most important advice we can give is seek out for opportunities for mentors to talk to, to talk to people who can give you advice on your specific situation, right? You're not there alone. I've gotten amazing advice from colleagues, and I'm now more than happy to pass it on and adapt it to specific situations. So, and I think we all feel like that. So please do approach us if you, you know, want to discuss anything.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that's what we're doing today, and that's what I think where you can learn the most, right, from people who have done the thing that you're interested in, and hearing about how they got there. So whether that's a scientist, whether that's a PhD student, whether that's a postdoc, whether that's a professor, you know, and being open to talking to people who you're like, I don't know if I do want this job, but unless I talk to them about it, I'm not gonna know. So yeah, well, thank you so much for your time and for sharing your experiences. It's been very nice to hear about it, and hopefully you had some fun as well. But I'm sure our listeners will be very interested in hearing your stories.
Thanks. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks so much. Yeah.
Bye-bye.
It's really fascinating.
Bye.
Lovely to meet you all as well.
Yeah.
Likewise. Bye. Nice day, everyone.
Yeah. And
bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you to Aswathi, Emma, Kirsten, and Joe for joining us. You can find out more about their careers and their work through the links in the podcast description. We hope that this conversation has inspired you to see all the different routes that you can pursue with a physics education. And if you're interested in working in research, be sure to check out all our other People Doing Physics episodes featuring scientists here at the Department of Physics at the University of Cambridge who share their journeys into academic research. As always, if you'd like to learn more about our work at the Cavendish Laboratory, please go to our website www.phy.cam.ac.uk and tag us on social media with hashtag PeopleDoingPhysics if you enjoyed this episode or have any questions or suggestions. This episode was recorded and edited by Chris Brock and hosted by Simone myself. Thank you for listening to People Doing Physics, and we'll see you next month.